Michael Avery with Classic Business on Classic 1027.
Derek Keyes died of natural causes at his home in Killarney on Sunday at age 86. He was Mandela's finance minister from 1992 to September of 94, and he served in F.W. de Klerk's cabinet too. My late colleague David Gleeson prevailed on then FM editor Nigel Bruce to pen the lead article in the FM when Keyes announced his retirement in July of 1994, barely the job, which came like a bolt from the blue and certainly shocked markets, which had been fearful of the economic management of a largely unknown ANC governing entity at the time. And Gleeson wrote that Keyes lived up to his name and became the key player in the NP's efforts to change the ANC's economic minds. He took the time to explain to Trevor Manuel the dangers of macroeconomic populism, marking the start of a friendship and a mentoring relationship across the political divide. He certainly was an intriguing, charismatic, and an unusually low-profile character for a politician. Well, I've got Professor Raymond Parsons on the line to recall Keyes and the contribution that he's made to South Africa. Professor, welcome.
Good evening, Michael. Well, just look, I think if you talk about the stature of someone like Derek Keyes, it really rested on two pillars. The first was, of course, his business acumen at Gencor in particular. But as you've indicated, his role in public affairs as a cabinet minister. I can only speak to the latter because I was then the Director General of the South African Chamber of Business. I had, over the 2 or 3 years that he was there, I had ample opportunity to be able to interact with him. And so, from my vantage point, I have certain impressions of him as a very important leader in the South African economy at that point in time.
Well, fascinating, Raymond. Stay right there. Can't wait to hear what those impressions were from that particular vantage point. We just have to break for the day's news wrap.
This is Classic Business with Michael Avery on Classic 1027.
Welcome back to Classic Business. I've got Professor Raymond Parsons of the Northwest University School of Business and Governance on the line, recalling the impact that Derek Keyes made on South African society. He was recruited into the NP's last cabinet to find two major challenges, wasn't he, Professor? He had an empty larder, thanks to years of economic sanctions, and also the need to urgently wean the incoming ANC off its socialist policies, which were imposed largely by its left-wing allies in the SACP in the Communist Party. And by all accounts, he achieved that with some aplomb, particularly at the Montfleur scenario planning exercise, where he managed to change Trevor Manuel's mind on a growth through redistribution model. What do you recall of Derek Keyes?
Well, Michael, I think from my own vantage point, I firstly found him a highly intelligent man with a good judgment. Those two don't always go together. And I would certainly say that there were 3 or 4 impressions that he left with me. Firstly, right at the outset, he threw his weight and that of the cabinet at the time behind a structure called the National Economic Forum. This was an informal structure which was intended to bring together the outgoing apartheid government, organized business, and the new political and labor players in a consultative process. And its purpose was to ease the transition to the obvious democracy that was coming. He called it, in a very classic phrase, the golden triangle of government and business and labor. And this, in a way, opened up the path eventually to a more formalized NEDBAC structure, which was then translated into legislation at the end of 1994. And then, of course, the second point which you have mentioned, that he found that the apartheid government's public finances were in a sorry state. South Africa was in a death trap with high inflation. He then grasped the nettle to begin to now lay the groundwork for turning the situation around with a culture of fiscal and indeed monetary discipline. I recall that his budget speeches were very short, not this high-flown rhetoric that we've become accustomed to. He focused on the fiscal essentials, he said, this is what we need to do. Thirdly, I thought that one of the important decisions he took was to overhaul the tax system. He realized that a democratic government would need more tax revenues. It would need an efficient tax collecting mechanism. So we appointed that commission of inquiry under Michael Katz into the tax system and to look at SARS, because we realized that a young democracy would need to be supported by adequate tax revenues within a modernized tax system. And then finally, I would say that through his leadership, I got the impression that in that very difficult transitional period, he inspired confidence in business and investors through his competence, his undoubted integrity, of which we could have done much more of in the recent years, but also his inclusive approach to all stakeholders in his decision making. So in a way, I think when I look back on his role, he was able, as far as possible, to stabilize business and investor confidence during a very critical period in South Africa's history.
That said, though, there was a lot of murmuring and muttering at the time about his decision to resign barely two and a bit months into his tenure. And I recall David Gleeson writing at the time that there's much about Finance Minister Derek Keyes that is impeccable, but his sense of timing is not. Do you have any insights to share around that particular period? He was replaced by banker Chris Liebenberg in September, but the timing did cause a lot of angst in the market.
Well, it did, and that showed the high regard in which he was held by the markets and by business. He gave very authentic family reasons for why he felt he had to depart from the scene, and I think we would accept those as being credible under the circumstances. What was important, though, he handed over to his successor, who, as you indeed mentioned, was Chris Liebenberg, who was there for a year, a new culture of how to turn the situation around. But it was quite clear that with the shift in the political paradigm, you could no longer have a Minister of Finance having to take some tough decisions from the Nationalist Party. It would have to be an ANC appointee. And so, in a way, he then paved the way for the appointment of Trevor Manuel. That was in 1996. And then you got a whole new approach. But a lot of the foundations were laid by what he was able to project as a message about the public finances and the economy of the country to both of his successors in the mid 1990s.
We could do with a great deal of that sort of that character ethically, firstly, and also someone who saw the bigger picture and was willing to bring the various parties together via that golden triangle you mentioned.
I just want to add, I recall him as a man of great integrity, who was reluctant to actually come into public affairs, but he felt he had a duty. He had a great sense of duty to do the right thing, to help us in that transition. And both in his intellectual caliber and in his character, he was able to put over a very important message at a very crucial stage in South Africa's history.
And as Tim Cohen writes in an excellent obituary today, that perhaps it's urban legend, but when Keyes was told on his appointment to the de Klerk cabinet that he could take R1 million in pension rights for a nominal payment, apparently he turned it down flat. Legend or not, I think it does speak volumes for the character of the man. He's obviously survived by his wife as well as Martin, his daughter Jessica, three grandchildren and three great grandchildren. So our thoughts here at Classic 1027 are with the Keyes family at this difficult time, and a memorial service has been Saturday, I believe, at St. George's Church in Parktown. Raymond, we're going to have to leave it there. Thanks for sharing your insights into the life of Derek Keyes.
Thank you very much.
That was Raymond Parsons, a professor at the Northwest University School of Business and Governance. Up next, we're going to have a look at the agri-tech revolution in Africa on the panel.